We have Marlon Kerner, third round pick of the Buffalo Bills in 1995 out of Ohio State, joining us on the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues as we talk Bills, draft process, and defensive backs. So, Bills Mafia, let's go get it and enjoy the show.
I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, welcome to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast. Bills news with a UK twist. Robin, myself, Matt.
Hey,
and we are just under, just over. By a day.
Two weeks Friday night, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, Thursday night for most other Friday people. Night? Thursday night for the Americans,
Friday night
for us. Literally 2 weeks away from the draft, and I mean, we've digested the news now of Stephon Diggs. We've talked about wide receivers. I think there's one thing that I did post up on Twitter. I remember speaking to you in our little chat. Obviously, what I saw out of this and how it actually kind of related to what Green Bay are doing. I know we've talked about wide receivers, but this is something I just wanted to actually just try and at least explain before we jumped into this episode, where we'll be talking defensive backs and having an interview with the third round drafty in 1995 cornerback Marlon Kerner. But in regards to Diggs, the reason I wanted to bring that up is because it was similar to what Green Bay have done, but they've done it just slightly differently to the way the Bills have done it. The fact that obviously they drafted Jordan Love whilst they still had Aaron Rodgers, and since then they've always been drafting more younger in all positions. And the fact that I think last year they had Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Jaron Reed, Lloyd Musgrave, all under the age of 25, all drafted within the first three rounds. Getting young.
Yes.
And the year before, they had Rodgers, Lazard, Cobb, Sammy Watkins, and Robert Tonyan, all 28 and above. And you kind of see how they've actually done it. They've obviously drafted Jordan Love in the first round in 2020, but they built it around him. They built it around him, build defense in the first round, and all their draft picks and wide receiver picks have all been second round, with the exception of Romeo Doubs at a fourth. And this is what I like to see. This is how we've said in previous shows how the Bills are trying to get younger and younger. Green Bay are probably one of the teams to look at on how they've actually done it. They had the youngest roster, and now they're starting to come good. Yes, there'll be teething points tonight or this year, but I still don't think the window's closed. Like, I think I saw one reporter
longer
say.
Term, no. Is that an admission on your part that maybe 2024 might be something of a reset, down year, choose your phrasing, but we're not necessarily going to be contenders this year, but 25, 26, 27, we're laying the foundations for that?
Yeah, I think you look at it, the way they did it, the way they moved on from Diggs's contract, I think he was... Him and Allen were going to have a combined 50 or 60 million cap space.
Yes.
The next couple of years. So by doing that, they've actually, they freed up 27 million this year, and they can get younger. And as much as I want to say that it's going to be a down year, yeah, it will probably be a reset, reload type situation. But I still think that will be challenging for the division. I still think there's enough in this team, and what we saw with Brady without Diggs, or with very limited use of Diggs, what this offense can do. And this defense will always be a good defense, even though we're missing White, Poyer and Hyde. But I think it could be down here for reset, but we see the rewards on there. And I think that's the way we need to go. I mean, everyone's saying that, oh, we need to trade up for Brian Thomas, for Romo Dusé, and all that. Yes, I'd love to see that.
The motherfucker, as I was trying to. I spent all week. I still can't think of a better way of putting it. Not just a softly, silky, third round, high ceiling. I want someone who just goes in there and kicks people in the head.
Yeah.
But
you look at the way you do it. I mean, as much as I want to do that, there is value in lower rounds. I mean, you've got to say Rashid Rice, okay, off the field instance. We'll go on to that. Obviously,
whomst among us hasn't had a couple of youthful dalliances, had one too many, got behind the wheel, killed a bunch of people. We've all done it.
Oh, drove home, got completely pissed drunk, drove home from Winchester to Poole quite badly, actually window down, going about 80-90 on the motorway. Oh shit, that was a bit too much. I hope there's no problems.
Allegedly, there's no proof of that. They can't prove anything. That's statute of limitations.
No one saw me in my Ford Fiesta Meridian doing 90 down the motorway.
There we go. We've all done it. Let's all get off our high horses. I mean, it's still a bloody stupid thing to do if you know you had a big job interview coming up, and if you know you might potentially have millions of dollars on the line. Maybe you get taxis everywhere.
Or Uber.
But these things happen. It doesn't make you a irredeemable figure.
Yeah, but I mean, just looking at what the Packers have done, and some of the wide receivers have come out in the last few years that have been not first round picks have actually started to bloom. There's ways and means in everything. Yes, you go out, sell the farm to move into the top 10 or high enough to get a Dusé or Brian Thomas. I mean, I've seen ones where mock drafts and ideas where they've traded up to number 5.
Yeah. I think I might have mentioned it last week as well. You are giving a hell of a lot, though.
But yeah, there is this. As I said, and obviously in our last show with Ian Cummings, this wide receiver group is actually quite deep, and we will. I'll probably say we will double dip and triple dip in this draft at wide receiver, and I think. Not having the bona fide number one in Stephon Diggs, or at least this year, I don't think it's going to hurt us.
Okay.
Because it's going to be, say, when Brady took over the Panthers, he had what? Robbie Anderson, Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore. At the time, none of those were really number one receivers. And they all got near enough 1,000 all-purpose 1,000 yards. So I still think that there is no, even with no out and out number one, we're still going to be in a good position, a healthy position, as long as we have number 17.
We've still got Josh Allen. We've still got a running game. We've still got an offensive line. We've still got two or three decent receivers. The question will always come, is it good enough to beat the Chiefs in the divisional round? Good. And that's where you're really going to find out, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, as I say, this year, I see playoffs at least. I mean, I see us battling for the division. If we get the division, it's a bonus. I don't see us actually, unless there's something miraculous happens, I don't see us getting to the championship game this year. But I see us being competitive and actually fighting for the division. And that is still good, even though it's going to be a downgrade in a way. But we'll talk a bit more about that in the off season once we know what the roster is going to be like, who we've drafted, and all that. And this episode, obviously, because we're going to have Marlon Kerner actually on a little bit later, we're going to start talking defensive backs in this draft. And I think to me, it's still a big need, not just at safety because the losing. Hyde and Poyer. Yes, we got Mike Edwards and we actually signed Taylor Rapp, but cornerback as well. I think it's one of those needs that is big, not as big as wide receiver, as some people say, but still a big need. I would say it's probably the top three biggest needs of the Bills this offseason and this draft itself.
And you think that it's a need, that it's a day two need?
Yeah. I don't, okay. unless something weird happens that they don't like, they don't trade up for a wide receiver. The only ones I could really see, if they dropped close enough to the Bills at 28, if you had the likes of Kool-Aid McKinstry, I still don't know why. He's still got probably the best name other than Storm Duck. If you've got one of him or Quinnen Mitchell or a Nate Wiggins that are actually there at 28, then potentially it depends on what Bean has on his board, because he's always said that most teams don't have a full 32-round grade.
Yeah.
Or 32-round players. So it might be a case that the wide receivers that the Bills have left on there, they don't value at 28, yet they have a cornerback that's actually dropped that's high on their first-round grade. They may go directly for him. That's how I kind of see it. And it's just interesting then to see what type of scheme they like to play. Obviously, the guy they brought in, the cornerback coach they brought in from Miami, Joseph Adai, or I just think I can't remember his first name now. He played a lot of two-man coverage and actually had a bit more man. So obviously it benefits, but it's just trying to find that right scheme. And one guy, if he's there, and this is a prospect to me that really intrigues and actually got the whole draft community, I think, just wondering where they'd actually play him. And it's okay. It's Cooper DeJean out of Iowa. 6 foot, 203 pound cornerback.
Okay.
People believe that he could play as a safety. But that's the question. It's how high they have that on a board. If it's a case that he plays a bit of corner, then they decide, okay, let's transfer him to safety or not. But he's probably one of the best, he's top three at least, cornerbacks in my ranking.
Top three of the whole draft?
Of the cornerback rating, cornerbacks, not the whole draft.
Yeah, I don't mean the whole... What do you mean, Matt?
What do I mean? Right, out of the cornerbacks,
the top three cornerbacks in the 2024 draft.
Yeah, I've got Terron Arnold, I've got Quinnen Mitchell, and then I've got DeJean and Nate Wiggins.
Oh, you do mean one of the top three cornerbacks in the 2024 draft? Just so I understand it. Okay, no, that's understandable. What's the more general question? Maybe Marlon will probably know it better than us. But what's the general sense of sort of cornerback depth this year? Because 2 years ago, the 2022 was a pretty rich one. There was like three, four, five were picked to go first round. What's the sense this time?
I think you're looking about the same. I think you're going to have Arnold and McKinstry, both Alabama. So you know they're going to be drafted high, and they test quite well. Quinnen Mitchell, Nate Wiggins, and DeJean, probably the ones that are going to go top first round. But even after that, you still have a fair few decent cornerbacks. You've got one of my favorites in there, which I'll talk about in a minute. But an interesting one about DeJean at Iowa, I just found this out. They played, the defensive coordinator created a new position. Let's put it that way. It's called the cash. So obviously, you've got the big nickel with and all that. They have the cash. It's a position where a defensive back, so a safety, plays like a nickel corner, inside and outside of the run. And actually, and try and come down to the next level for linebacker level. And Dijon played that quite a lot. So you've got a movable chess piece in him, and he's one of the best tackling defensive backs, and got the probably the best ball hawk playmaking skills in there. So it's a position where you could see, if he drops, the Bills dropping in on him.
Hmm.
But I'm not sure. I still think it's going to be wide receiver at number one. But I just don't know. I just don't know how you value cornerback over like safety. Obviously, defensive back be one of the big three needs. But
yeah,
you personally value the cornerback side of it, knowing obviously we've got Jackson, Benford, and
Dane's gone. I've already shed my tears. Dane's got his Levi Wallace deal.
Yeah, hasn't he?
Yeah. Got it to form. Couldn't be happier for the guy. Love it. Nothing I like more than 6th, 7th round undrafted guys getting paid. Honestly, I love it.
But do you see that depth or
I tell you what it hinges on. It hinges on whether Bean stroke McDermott stroke coaching staff think that Kyrie Elam can have a good year three. Because you've got Rasul Douglas, you've got Christian Benford as a pretty good starting pair. If Kyrie Elam, you can either get him into a scheme because he's more of a man-to-man guy. If you can find a system that works for him and he can have a healthy run at it, I think you still maybe go cornerback, but you go cornerback 6th, 7th round. It's a day three, whoever you can find. I think safety is, to borrow your phrase, the sneaky need. If you like someone, I know they haven't got a third round, but, and again, this comes down to what you do in the first round, of course, but if you've still got your 60 and you like a guy at 60, then I think maybe you go safety there. I wouldn't go cornerback there, but I think in terms of filling out the safety room, I like the guys we've got, but one more at 60 could work very well.
Okay. Well, you talked day three cornerbacks and on there, and one name, I know he's come in for a visit, and we know what Bean's like at drafting from this particular school, especially defensive backs.
Which school?
Dane Jackson.
Yeah.
Damar Hamlin.
Oh, I can't remember the name of the school. It's Pennsylvania, isn't it?
Pitt,
yeah.
Yeah, MJ Devonshire. More can play both inside and out. So you've got a guy that can back up Taron in the and obviously play outside if needs be. It'll be more of a round 6, round 7 pick. But he has the only issues with him is his hips, and obviously Marlon will probably explain a lot more what scouts look for when they come to cornerbacks and defensive backs, the way they can actually move and twist and how flexible their hips are. And he's actually a bit too handsy.
Yeah.
That's the hardest one.
He's another Elam because he was a bit great. Still a bit grumpy, wasn't he?
I mean, he's over eager in the run game. His technique in tackling needs a lot of work, but there's good points that he's got an explosive burst. Ken Ashiam has a natural feel for pursuit. Ashiam can actually read the quarterback. So he's got that vision and that patience to read the eyes, not bite all the time, will have the occasional bite, but he's actually got natural ball skills and actually, I mean, his play speed is I wouldn't say great. I'd say good to above average. So he's definitely one to look at. And I think if I had Dean Kindig, who we're going to have on in a few weeks' time, spreadsheet up, I think they've seen a fair few of their games, or Pitt's games. So definitely one to load up on. And well, I've got a list of about 2 or 3 more that I really think could make a difference.
Mm.
Another one, he's got an interesting story, is Kawantes Stiggers.
Now, that is a name. That is a name.
He actually he played last year in the CFL.
Oh, okay.
He actually he had a couple of Division II offers for college, but his actually father. This is interesting. It's a unique story. His father died in 2020, and he decided to leave school and quit football and worked and loads of different jobs to support his family. So he's actually got. He went to the fan-controlled league, and then actually got offered a CFL contract. And actually, that was 2022, and actually won Rookie of the Year for him.
So he's got sort of like real life experience. He's not a college recruit then.
He's not a college recruit, so he's got. He's got actual full game. Professional game experience on there. He's actually he's good at locating the ball. He actually can make the adjustment. He's aggressive. He's willing in the runs. He's actually he plays special teams, which I think you need as a defensive back, especially if you're going to be fifth or sixth round, seventh round. He's got that special team so he can come on and actually play that whilst learning to rope. He's going to be very raw. Footwork is needs refining. He still needs to learn the roots, especially the step up from CFL to NFL.
Yeah.
So there's something. He's more of a, he'll be your blank canvas. If you,
yeah.
I know. Put that expression. Blank canvas.
Unspoiled lump of clay to mould in Sean McDermott's image. I mean, look, he likes taking raw talent, doesn't he? If he's got the talent and he's got the upside, and you're a cornerback, defensive back guy, Sean McDermott's a pretty damn good landing spot, isn't he?
Getting coached by him. So he's one to look out for. I don't think the Bills will potentially get him, but you never know.
What's his sort of general day two, day three kind of play thing? Day three. Well, you never know. It becomes a, with absolutely no disrespect intended, it becomes a little bit of a crapshoot, doesn't it, when you get into to day three, who you rate. There's probably a general consensus as to the first 50, you know, with five or ten places maybe here or there, but usually your top 50 is your top 50. Once you start getting plus 150, it's who do you like at what position and what maybe they offer you kind of thing. That's how you get the diamonds in the rough, isn't it?
The one guy, I mean, I would even go if we took a wide receiver in the first round. If we do have a second round, depending on what we give up,
I would
actually go for a cornerback in round two. And
if they keep 60, you take cornerback over safety at 60.
Yeah,
really.
If we could package up and get into a third round, then I'd probably look to safety. But if this is where you think is, as you said, is Elam going to be the one? Is he going to be the thing?
Can he have a good year three?
Yeah.
Can he have a really so year?
Because the one guy I like and looked at quite a lot, and I've got him at cornerback six or seven in the list, is Max Melton out of Rutgers. 5'11", 187 pounds, ran a 4.39 40, jumped on the vertical 40 and a half inches, and jumped over 11.3 in the broad. So he's an explosive athlete. He played in the slot in the red zone. Can play outside as well, and special teams. So for a second round pick at a cornerback, and you're playing special teams, it's worth a shot there. And he was a former wide receiver. And this is what I kind of like, in seeing how these high school wide receivers actually transfer that skill to cornerback.
Hmm.
Because
it's what will be an interesting question. Sorry, I just interrupted you. Yeah. What will be an interesting question, and I think Marlon will probably have some insight, is to when you look at a cornerback, what do you go through to think that maybe that person is a future safety? And why why wasn't it spotted earlier? What is it about? Is it a physicality thing? Is it a brain thing? That because I honestly it'd be interesting to know, because they keep talking about putting Benford to safety, don't they? And it'd just be interesting to know someone who's been there and done it.
Yeah,
what it is. Is it just a feel? Is it just a thought? I don't know. It's an open question.
Yeah, but with Melton, he can play man and zone, so he is scheme versatile.
Okay, well, that's good, because we got good zone guys, but you need a man guy for the third and seven, don't you?
Yeah.
And you need a stop, don't you? That's if we've got a bit of a weakness, it's there, isn't it?
And he likes to dictate the play, so especially the line of scrimmage, so he will jam wide receivers if asked to. He's actually bump and run. He'll he's a confident in run support. He actually he's a willing tackler. Okay, he gets sloppy with his technique, his tackling, so it needs to be refined a little bit more. And sometimes he's prone to biting and double moves.
Did you just say biting?
Yeah. Biting on double moves.
Okay, yes, right. Yeah, we're not talking Tyson on Holyfield.
No. We're not talking Tyson. Tyson on Holyfield.
Gets pulled by the eyes. The corner the eyes. That sort of thing. Right. Okay.
Yeah, but he's one of those guys that he is a guy that is, as I say, scheme versatile, can play both outside, inside, and a guy that really could make a difference. So he's definitely one of my guys. If we had to do a bang a table segment, he would be one of those guys.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, but I mean, as I say, the other position really is, oh dear, excuse me, is the safeties. I mean, the ones that linked the most with us, mainly because of our cornerback, our defensive back coach, cornerback coach, is Kamari Kitchens. I keep calling him Kitchens. I don't know why, but obviously he tested poorly at the combine, but yet he's still a game changer. He's still ball hawk. And you're just wondering if the new guy coming in has had having a word with Bina McDermott and saying this guy could be our starting safety, and could be our guy for the next God knows how many years. Because as I say, his coverage skills are great. He's got good anticipation, ball hawking, good ball tracking, physical and coverage. Obviously, weaknesses is his testing. He's good at coverage, but he's not elite. So he's not your Jamal Adams. He's not your Jordan Poyer. What other good safeties are there?
Who do we have?
But you know what I mean on those ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then just needs consistency on tackling. So he's one name. And obviously you've got Tyler Newbin, who is probably safety number one. Not just for me, but I think as everyone as a whole, the fact that he's your all around guy. So he'll do run support, pass support, play. I think he can play both positions. So he's like a Swiss Army knife.
Okay.
And he's got probably the best frame at 6'1", just shy of 200 pounds. He's actually aggressive, fluid in his movement, good communicator. His processing speed is fast. He's got your swagger, but his explosiveness and long speed can limit him. So, as much as say, there are stuff which can be exploited in the NFL, but through now with, I don't want to call college coaches like part-time, but with professional coaching from specific, from obviously positional coaches, you can actually mask those and actually improve those. So he's definitely a name to look out for. But yeah, I think there's quite a lot. I mean, you've got Jaden Hicks, you've got Dedadrian Taylor, Dedadrian Taylor Demerson. I hate double barrel names. Like I didn't do another one.
Just pick one, God's sakes.
Cole Bishop, Ketan Olorunpado, and another one, Tyreek Smith, Georgia. He's actually he's a day three, potentially day two pick, but he's actually when you play on Georgia, you are going to be noticed and have people watch you. He's actually he's great in the red zone, a great tackler. He actually he's a very physical, and he's actually physical in the run support. Think Anton Winfield, not Junior, Anton Winfield.
Okay, I'm thinking.
That's what he plays like. That's how he plays. He's actually short air explosiveness, and the instincts and the physicality really will actually give him something to develop. Probably be a backup to start with, but could get a run and could get a start somewhere. And I'm bearing our time because we have Marlon coming soon. The last one I'm just going to put out here for now, and we'll talk about this in our chat with Dean later on in the season, is an intriguing one. Sione Vaki of Utah, a dual prospect. So he played both played running back and safety in college.
Okay. He's probably going to have to choose one if he goes to the NFL, but it might mean he's got a bit of speed about him.
He's already come out and said that he's going to be a safety in there, and he's obviously he's got good strength and physicality being a runner, very good ball skills, can track well, good at reading the eyes, great quick feet and change of direction, obviously because of his running back nature, but obviously it's just the inconsistencies. He was actually he was able to mask it by the level of competition in college, but he's gonna need to bulk up a little bit more, get a bit more stronger when he's actually facing NFL receivers. And just like some of the others, and we know McDermott wants this, is the key for this, is actually his tackling technique needs to be consistent. But he's one that really is a interesting one. Ran a 4.62 40, which is not the greatest, but for a fifth round, maybe sixth round pick, someone you can develop, and obviously running back experience, you could potentially put him on the on special teams. And we know the whole new rule now on the special teams and kickoff, that you never know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, that kickoff, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's going to be a whole. I think it's going to be a bit of interesting. It's going to be interesting to see which team kind of deals with it sooner. Because it's quite a radical change. And you point out there, it's going to change like who people are drafting, if people are drafting for special teams and that kind of thing. It is going to change. So it pays
when you're in college to have that special teams thing, especially if you're a punt or kick returner.
Mm.
Or especially a kick returner, because the way they're inviting it and the way they've actually set it out means there's going to be a little bit more excitement, hopefully, and it's going to be a bit more of a chess game rather than just let's just smash it through the end zone.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me.
I still think that's very likely to happen. But if it does, yeah. if it does drop into that landing zone, there's going to be some interesting formations as well. There's going to be some interesting blocking moves as well.
And they can't fair catch.
No.
So they'll have to make the decision. They either let it go, or they're going to have to, when they catch it, they're going to have to run it.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting time, and let's say
it was either that or just start on the 25. Just take it out completely. Start on the 25. It's fine.
That's true.
So it'd be interesting. It'd be interesting to see how they go on. There'll be all kinds of interesting analytics coming out of this.
Yeah.
As well. So yeah, it'd be worth keeping an eye. I do like things like that. It'd be interesting. Yeah.
But as I say, we'll talk a lot more as we go forward on there. Now we're just gonna, obviously we've got Marlon coming on the show, so hope you enjoy our little chat with Marlon and a third round pick in 1995. We're going back some time there, so it's going to be interesting to hear about his career and all that. So I hope you guys enjoy this interview. And on the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, we're joined by Marlon Koerner, round 3, pick 76 of the 1995 NFL draft out of the Ohio State. Marlon, thank you ever so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Matt. It's been a minute. We were trying to do this for a while, but glad it finally worked out with both of our schedules.
Yes, I've been looking forward to it for a long time, obviously, because A, you're obviously an ex-Bill, but also because we're going to talk on a little bit later about the draft. You have your own college podcast on the Cover One Network. It's what happened on Saturday with Marlon Koerner. So it's always good to hear that. I do listen to it. So it's always great to have guys on and actually just talk a lot about the Bills and your experience with them.
As a player, it was interesting just kind of coming out, because when I went through the draft process, I didn't even know that they were interested in drafting me. It was really crazy just going through that entire draft process for me, just trying to figure out who likes you, who's going to be around to draft you, right? Because everyone makes promises, like, if you're on the board when we pick, you know, we're going to pick you, right? And everybody says the same thing, like, be ready. And you get text messages and calls, and your agent's like, hey, I just got a text from so-and-so. They're picking in like 3 picks. They say you're on the board. So if all goes well, then you may be their next selection. And so you get your hope up, and you go through that whole process. But to even step back a little bit, just for me, like coming off my senior year, I had like such a crazy up and down senior season, just trying to figure out, like most guys that are in my position, trying to figure out if you're going to make it to the league, and get your dream of making it to the NFL. So you do what most guys, I did what most guys that are young do. Like, I tried really hard to play really, really well. And when you try too hard to do something, you either have a lot of success early or sometimes it just doesn't go well. And for me, like, I really, like, really pressed hard, didn't follow good technique, sometimes just didn't get in the playbook like I should because I was trying to make a play. And then you kind of turn something loose because you're like, listen, we're dependent on you. And I think for me, so I had like such an up and down senior season. I was coming off a separated shoulder at the beginning of the camp. I had a grade 3 separated shoulder.
Ooh.
I was supposed to miss 4 to 6 weeks. I missed 4 days.
Jeez.
Numbed it up. Like, they're like, no, I'm like, I'm not missing any games. I'm like, shoot it up, numb it up, do whatever you need to do. Like, my shoulder was like down here. And somehow I made it through training camp. They were like, okay, what can you do? Like, I couldn't get my arm, like, I couldn't go out like this wide. Like, if you were to lay down and bench press, I couldn't go out a normal bench press width without it causing pain or without my shoulder like almost popping out of socket. So I had a pad on the shoulder, and it is the craziest thing, because like, they wouldn't allow it to happen now, but they took a like something for a cast, and they took and they molded it to my shoulder. Mm-hmm. And then we sprayed the sticky spray on it. And I would put this on top of the shoulder to keep extra padding on it, and then put my shoulder pads on. And I played every game like that.
Nice.
It was unreal until about the halfway point of the season. Then I was like, you know, I'm not even going to wear this thing anymore. It's not doing anything. I'm fine. And then I could not bench press the entire season. Like, all I could, right. The only thing I could do was close grip bench. So I would go, and when they would say normal bench press work, I'm like, I can't. Like, I can't get my shoulder that wide. So I would close grip. I could get here, and I would close grip the entire season. So that's how I stayed in shape and kept the strength up to make tackles that entire season. And then it was just up and down. Like, you know, when we talk about young players coming into the NFL, we always talk about understanding the language. Well, that also applies to terminology and really understanding what coach speak is.
And
so I always talk, when people say, well, how do you understand certain things? Like, coaches have to do a good job of really articulating what's in their mind, making sure that when you say it, that my speak translates into what the message is that you want to say to me. And so there was a lot of miscommunication between myself and my coach of how he wanted me to play a certain coverage, how he wanted certain things to look. And I was just like, I'm trying so hard, coach. Like, I'm just trying to get all these things done. I'm trying to do this. And I think there was a defining moment for me that season. And it's not one that you're like, oh, wow, like it just clicked. It clicked for me because I had a death in my family. My aunt was murdered, like, in the middle of the season. And so I had to step back and kind of reflect, like, man, like, was I the best nephew that I could have been? Like, could I have done some things differently? Could I recognize some of the signs of some of the things that she was going through? And just the situation that she was in. And she never got to watch me play a college football game. And so when I stepped back, it made me realize that this is just a game. And whether I make it to the NFL or not, there are other things bigger and more important than the NFL, which is your life. And so, like, in the big scheme of things, like, the NFL is going to be there. And from there on, I just kind of said, why are you playing this game? I started asking myself questions. You know, when you analyze those things, I was like, well, why are you playing? And I went back to why I started playing football all over, which is, I just love the game. I love the game of football. And so then I just got calm. I just kind of went back to the basics, finish the season on a high note, get through the Senior Bowl, go to the combine, run track in the off season, that season, because I was still in school. And I was like, and I worked out with the track coach, and he said, you want to run track? Sure. So I ran track to get in shape to lead up to my senior day, my pro day.
Yeah.
And I ended up running a 4.35 40. My pro day. And that was the first time that anyone from the Bills actually said anything to me. They were just like, what'd you eat for breakfast? And I said, pancakes. I went to McDonald's. Like I had this whole thing laid out. I get up. I was warmed. I was ready to go. I had my sweats on. I walked from my apartment. I just wanted to clear my mind. I had my headphones on. I'm like, I'm walking down. I'm going to stop at McDonald's, which is like right on High Street in the middle of campus. Like, I'm going to stop here. I'm going to get some breakfast. And then I walked across campus, walked to, we had the Woody Hayes Athletic Facility, the WAC, as we called it, walked there and started warming up for my pro day, and had a really good pro day that day. And that was how I knew. That was it. They didn't say we're going to draft you. They just said, you know what? You have pancakes. Oh, you see the pancakes more often. I was like, you know what? I think I might. And that's how it went down. Like, that's when I first found out that was the only conversation I had with the Bills. And then they called me on draft day. Like, there was no conversations with my agent. There was none of that. It was just, hey, you've been drafted by the Buffalo Bills, which is a crazy story in itself.
Yeah. So, I mean, how'd that go? Obviously, I'm assuming that you're at home actually watching it. And then you get that call, obviously. How did that feel for you when you actually got that call, whether it was Bills, whether it was another, whatever team it was, obviously it was the Bills, but when you get that call on there, how did that, in that instance, how did it make that make you feel?
It was amazing, honestly, because you don't know what's going to happen. And in 95, for your listeners, the NFL and the spectacle of the draft being on nights, like, you know, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday. It wasn't like that. It was, you get up on Saturday, the draft came on at noon. So you had Mel Kiper and all those guys on ESPN. That was the only way you could watch the draft, ESPN and the ESPN2. And they started at noon, and they would go until like about 11:30 at night on a Saturday. It was literally a 2-day affair. Yeah. And so I was like, all right, you know, and the NFL says they'll give you a draft grade. Like, hey, you're projected to go here. And so my draft grade was anywhere from third round to sixth round. Like, you could go anywhere in there. Obviously, if somebody likes you, they can take you sooner. But based off of the talent that they projected and from other schools and people who they ranked higher, they were like, you're like the 10th best or 9th or 10th best cornerback in this draft. So you should go here.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I sat at home, like I turned the news on or turned the ESPN at noon. And I went to school with some really good football players and Joey Galloway and Corey Stringer. I knew those guys were going to go high. So I'm just watching the draft to see which other my friends go high. I'm hanging out with family. We barbecue. Like, I had some steaks. I was like, I'm just going to enjoy this moment and just sit and relax. So in Ohio, you have a few other choices. So besides ESPN2, we had something called the Sports Channel, which played all of Ohio sports. Mm-hmm. And so you didn't just get ESPN2 with your normal cable package back then. Like, now you get ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, you know, you get all of it. ESPN Classics, you get a lot of ESPNs. Back then you had to pay for extra for all those channels. So for some reason, my aunt confused the Sports Channel and ESPN2.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, 7 o'clock comes along. We had potato salad. We had everything you could think of for a cookout. We had it. And I'm just enjoying watching my friends get drafted. The nice thick cut steaks, everything you could think about. I went all out. I splurged for it. And then it switched to ESPN2. So we went to go change the channel and she doesn't have it. And I'm just shaking my head like, you gotta be kidding me. So we're sitting there and we can't watch it anymore. So what are we going to do? So somebody says, well, let's go bowling. Like, you know, like you may go tonight. You may not. Like, they'll call your agent first. I'm like, but they might call me directly. So, yeah. Okay, we're all in the house. I'm a twin. So if anybody, most people don't know that about me. I have a twin brother. So my twin brother's there. I had my best friend there. I had some other friends and cousins and family there. And so we decided we're going to go bowling. And I put on literally in the house in coats. Like, it's March or it's April, but it's kind of cool. So we still had to wear some jackets. And so I put on my coat and I'm sitting there and I said, well, let me just see where they are, what round they're at. And they were in the middle. They were at the beginning of the third, kind of going through, getting close to the middle of the third. And I'm just sitting there like, you know what? Let me just kind of watch this just a little bit. And then once we get out of the third round, we can leave. Like, I'll just watch for about 5 more minutes and then we can go and go bowling. And I also have a twin brother and a cousin. We're all the same age. We grew up together. We're like literally 6 months apart from each other. So we kind of had this rule of nobody is allowed to be on the phone in the house. Well, you can't tell, you know, a 22-year-old girl not to be on the phone if her boyfriend calls her. So she's on the phone talking to some guy and she yells up, Marlon. I'm like, yes. Telephone. I'm like, who is it? I didn't hear the phone ring. I don't know. Some guy from the Buffalo Bills. And I was like, what? And so that's how I found out that it was the Bills on the line. I missed the selection process. I missed all of that because we didn't have ESPN. So I didn't get to see with the 76th pick, the Buffalo Bills select Marlon. I missed all of that. But I picked up the phone and it's Dwight Adams on the phone. And he's just like, hey, Marlon Kerner. I'm like, yes, sir. Congratulations. You're a Buffalo Bill. And he's like, we're looking forward to seeing you. And so then I hang up the phone. Thank you. You know, get hugs from my family, my mom. And then I went bowling. Like, I literally just said, okay, we can go bowling now.
I'm pretty selected. That's it. Let's go. Let's go.
Got drafted. I'm good. I called my agent, said, hey, I don't know if they called you or not, but the Bills just drafted me. I just got the phone with them. We had the congratulations. You know, that's a great spot to be in. And that was it. He said, I'll reach out to them. I know their GM really well. And that was it. I kind of went bowling and sat in just kind of thinking about since I was 4 years old, and I knocked out my two front teeth playing football on my fourth birthday. No ice cream and cake that day for me. I was like, I always wanted to play in the NFL. And so I had reached that goal, and then just kind of trying to figure out what the business of the NFL is. But I got to live the draft dream for a few more days, just kind of soaking it all in and really just kind of thinking like, wow, only a select few guys get to hear their name called by an organization. And I was one of the select few. So I was very fortunate.
No, that's good. I mean, when you approach training camp for the first time and you're going up against Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, Andre Reed, Steve Tasker, Kent Hull, you've got Bruce Smith on your side of the defense. How did that actually feel for you going into that training camp, knowing that you've got, obviously, with the history of the Bills, obviously, four straight Super Bowls? I'm not worried about the result of that, but coming into that with those players there, you must have been really either switched on, laser focus, taking everything in, or was it real nerves? You're playing alongside these great Hall of Fame players or Hall of Fame elect players.
Training camp wasn't the surreal moment for me. Mini camp, because we had like a rookie mini camp, and all the vets were there. Like, it was unreal. Like, it was kind of one of those optional mini camps, but Andre was there, Tasker was there, Thurman was there, Bruce was there. And I was like, this is kind of crazy to kind of think that the stars of your NFL, the stars of these teams, the guys who we know they're going to be Hall of Fame players were there. So that was kind of like, oh my gosh, there's Thurman. Oh my God. And so I'm trying not to be this fanboy and say, can I get your autograph? And understand like, okay, I'm now a teammate, and trying to figure out, how do I fit in? So I didn't understand yet. I was trying to figure that part out. But I think I remember as training camp went on, like my first, we had to do all the normal drills, right? So you're in there like, here's our coverages. Okay. And then you're going to go out and have to guard Andre and Thurman. I didn't have to guard Thurman because they didn't flex him out wide. So I was fine. I was like, okay, good. But I had to guard Andre. I had to guard Tasker and a few other veteran wide receivers that they had. Bill Brooks, who he had signed. So I was trying to figure that part out while also learning a new defense. We had a new technique I had to learn. And so I just remember kind of trying to figure it out. And then I just said, you know, I'm going to just go play football. Like, I'm not worried about making mistakes. Like, they drafted me. So I'm a figure this out as I go. I'm going to try to make some plays and not make too many mistakes. But I kind of let it go. I didn't worry about anything. But I also had really good role models in front of me, and Jeff Burris and Thomas Smith and Henry Jones and Kurt Schultz. So they kind of helped me pick it up quickly. And then I remember leaving that rookie camp, and Andre Reed was just kind of like, hey, listen, let me talk to you for a second. I'm like, okay. He's like, you know, you obviously know the history. Like, we're trying to get back to another Super Bowl. We want to get another one in and try to win one. And you can play football. Cause I had made a few plays, had knocked some passes around, did some things. He's like, you can play football. So what I need you to do by the time you come back for training camp is I need you in your playbook. I need you to understand your assignments. I need you to know what you need to do to make sure that we have the best chance to get ready to go to try to make a run for another Super Bowl. I'm like, okay. And so that was kind of my validating moment of, okay, you can play at this level. And from then on, I was like, I'll do whatever I need to do to make that, make this team. And so it worked out well. We came back in training camp. I had a good training camp with them, played, earned that starting nickel position, that coveted nickel position that Taron Johnson plays now.
Yeah.
It was the perfect position, and then ended up moving outside when Jeff Burris tore his ACL about week six or seven of the season. He tore his ACL and was down for the rest of the year. So I moved out to his side, the left corner side, and my good friend Ken Urban ended up coming in, and then he became the nickel position, and we just kind of had fun. We just went out there and played. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things when we always say when young guys, you don't know what you don't know. So I didn't know to be nervous about certain things. I didn't know to be like, oh my gosh, this you may never ever get into the playoffs. I just kind of went out there saying, I'm going to go out here and play my position the way they coached me to play. So I didn't know certain things. So I wasn't afraid. The moment wasn't too big for me because I didn't know any better. And I was already poised to be in that position because Ohio State played in such a large crowd. So the crowd noise wasn't an issue for me because we played in front of 96,000 people every Saturday. And then we would play in the big house and other stadiums where it got loud. So I learned how to kind of block out that noise. So I was kind of ready to go by default just because of the conference that I played in the school that I chose.
Yeah. And how many times did you actually pick off Jim Kelly in training camp?
We probably picked him off a lot, but he definitely, it was a challenge. We didn't necessarily pick him off so much when they were in theirs, but he would always tell us, like, you know, when we would give the scout team look for the K-gun offense, he would say, if you got a chance to pick it off, pick it off. Like, there is no let it go through, let them catch it. No, I mean, if it's a bad pass, it's a bad pass, and I need to get better. So he would thread the needle on us, and he would make them like, man, like, this, okay, this is a whole different level. And then we would pick some off on him. So, you know, I probably got a few on him in training camp, and he would come up like, what'd you see there? What'd you read? And I would say, okay, I saw X, Y, and Z, you know, based off the split, the receiver didn't sell this enough. So this is why I jumped this route. So there was always this kind of this proving ground and this competition that he wanted all the time. So that when you got into games, you knew you weren't going to face that level of competition. You might have somebody who just wasn't going to play to see it that way. So it was really an open experience of like, he was okay with throwing picks in practice to get better. And he would take chances. And I love that. Like, take chances, I'm going for it. So it was really fun.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the career didn't last as long as you know, anticipated. You had that really bad
ACL injury. Yeah. Twice.
Yeah, ooh, I've done my ACL already, so I'm waiting for surgery on that one. So I did that playing football myself. Well, soccer. Yeah. But obviously, after that, obviously went through. How did that really affect you? Knowing obviously that the season, your career was all pretty much over. Obviously, tried to come back. Obviously, it wouldn't happen. Then, in 2015, you then worked for the Bills, obviously in a personnel capacity, obviously being director of alumni, then actually player engagement.
I think for me, it was kind of one of those things. It was cathartic to be back in that position, because when you first leave football, you don't understand like if your career is over, right?
Yeah.
So for me, it was kind of one of those like, all right, is it really over? I'm not sure. Is it just I need time to get healthy? The business aspect of it is they don't wait for you, right? So we always hear that, not for long. What have you done for me lately? Like, they don't really, like, the business doesn't dictate that they're going to wait and give you a lot of time to come back and play. Like, if they think you're going to be healthy and you should be back, you'll get a little bit of time. So the first time I tore my ACL, it was, you should be back. We value you as a player. We think you're going to be back. And so I tore my left ACL the first time. And then I literally, and I wouldn't recommend anybody doing this. So when we talk about Trey White, who's now no longer on the team, and he was going to have an ACL injury, and everybody's like, she should be back. Like, it's been 9-10 months. I'm like, that's not enough time. Cause I'm the example of rushing and trying to come back and play in a professional football game 9 months to the day of when you had your first surgery. That was me. And I tore the other ACL cause I wasn't really ready. There were certain things that I just couldn't do at that level. Like, I could do it in practice, I could do it on air, I could do certain things just trying to get ready to play, like, all right, we're going to do this drill, but now to go full speed, it's a whole different level. And I think sometimes as fans, we don't understand that. Like, speed of the game is a lot faster than just practice speed and drill speed. And so if you can't do it at a high level, you end up injuring yourself. So I was really glad they took their time with Trey, but I didn't. I pushed it and I tore my other ACL. And then all of a sudden you're like, all right, am I done? And then you get released because of the business and you try to go get healthy and you're like, look, this is not going to work out. So then I just walked away and then come back full circle. So I was able to really help guys understand you have a small window, but then also help guys understand that some of the skills you have now, they translate into the real world. Even if you play for eight seasons, or even if you got to play 10, 15 seasons, like a Lorenzo Alexander, okay, Lorenzo's leaving, he's 34. You can't even retire in America till you're 65. So, or 55. Like, so even if you say I'm done at 55, you still have 20 years. What are you going to do for the next 20 years? And so really kind of helping guys really focus on trying to maximize their time with the team, however long that's going to be, but then have another a macro level view of when you look at the big picture, your NFL career is like this and yeah. your life. Like it's this much of your life. And in the big picture, your life is like this. The NFL is going to be here. It's a very small window into it. So if you don't really develop other skills, really try to do other interests, make the right connections while you're playing to set up things for when you're done, you'll have a hard time transitioning out of it because you put all your eggs in one basket. And the NFL, you know, you can't play forever. Like when you talk to guys, yeah. like, listen, you're on, this is the tail end of your career. You have more football behind you than you do in front of you. And that's mm-hmm. the reality. Like you, if you've been playing since you were 4 or 6 years old, Pop Warner, you're in the NFL, the average career is 3 years. Most guys are going to be done by the time they're 24, 25. That's just the reality of it. So yeah. what are you going to do for the next 35, 40 years of your life if you don't have a good game plan? That transition can be really tough and really rough for individuals.
So it's pretty much your life experience of being the NFL player, yeah. actually only having the 3 years experience, you were able when you became the director of player engagement, really helped these rookies, especially coming in, to actually understand their role. Obviously, we see now that obviously rookies actually are starting to make more mistakes off the field and all that. But obviously, your role was more of that leadership, that guidance, like a guidance counselor type role for the Bills.
Yeah. I mean, you could say like a guidance counselor, just kind of helping them transition in. But then we also help transition the guys that got released, right? So you're always there for them. You talk to guys, you show them mistakes. Like you don't want to be this type of guy. You know, don't put yourself in a bad situation. Because if you do, the team's going to get rid of you. Like that, it's simple. Like you don't have the clout. Like if you're not Josh Allen, who was a top 10 pick, you don't have that much leeway. You can't make that many mistakes. So depending on what you've done, how much clarity we can get as an organization on what you're accused of, like if it's a DUI or something like that, where we can kind of figure out what it is. Like,
yeah.
The leash is very short, so to speak. So mm-hmm. I help you guys understand, like if you're a draft pick, you might get to make a mistake here or there. If you're an undrafted guy, the window's smaller.
Yeah.
If you're a journeyman, it's really small. So you don't have the luxury of just thinking you can do whatever. And then you look mm-hmm. at the guys who make those mistakes and, you know, like Ruggs, who played for the Raiders, and you know, you make a mistake, like please don't drink and drive. We had everything set up in place for you to do those things, but if you get behind the wheel and you cause an injury, your career is going to be over, and there's nothing anybody in the league can do. No one's going to get you out of it. No one's going to be able to save you from it, and you still see guys making those mistakes, and so that's where that role, player engagement, whoever is in that role, they're so critical because you don't know what guys are going through. You don't know what guys have seen in their life. You don't understand how guys view certain things. And so if you grew up in a household where people always drink and drive, you think nothing of it because that's what you've seen. And so it's almost an impulse. It's a reaction that you do because you've seen somebody in your family do it so many times. So you're helping guys break that habit of don't do that. Like you have too much to lose. And then helping them understand everyone that you bring with you is not your friend. You can't support everyone because that's the other thing. People think everybody in the NFL is millionaires. And like, you can't set up and take care of everyone else and then think you're going to be able to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
You don't have the money to do that. So making sure that you prioritize who you want to try to help and take care of in your family, but you can't take care of everyone while also making sure you have enough to save for yourself, because that's always the other thing, right? You see guys get in and make a lot of money and say they made so much money, but how do they lose it all? Well, if you have a big entourage and you try to do some things that financially you can't do, and you try to take care of too many people, you end up giving instead of saving for yourself. And then when you're done, you have nothing to show for your hard work because you've given it out to everyone else, trying to make everyone else happy. So trying to help guys figure out all that happy medium, not just rookies, second year, third year, vets that come in from other teams that maybe didn't have that type of culture. You try to help all of them go through that process. So it was a really fun experience, fun, rewarding experience. And then it was just kind of like, all right, time to go. It was time to move on to a new chapter. And so I have nothing but fond memories of being there with the Bills organization. And now I'm just kind of like, I'm just a former guy, kind of like, hey, I'm here. If you need any help, I can help you. I can talk you through it. So that's why I started the podcast, just to talk about college football, since there's so many Bills podcasts that are out. Like, hey, let's talk about those guys and find out their journey to get to the NFL. What was it like? What was your college experience like? What was it like going through the process? How did you get here? Why did you make the change, right? Some guy like Lorenzo was a defensive tackle when he was in college and did all these things and then played defensive tackle in the NFL. So it's always interesting to hear how you made the shift from one position, losing weight, becoming fit, and everything that you need to be to play that position. How'd you learn it? What were your cues to kind of pick up? Because it's different to play defensive tackle. Your responsibilities, your assignment, your terminology, your gap schemes are a little different playing one position and then switching to another position that has a little bit more range. And so like hearing guys' stories like that is always fun, you know, and then we have a little fun and banter because I'm a Buckeye. So I always talk about football and we have those fun conversations.
Yeah. I mean, going on obviously what you say about obviously Lorenzo being the example going from one position to another. Obviously with defensive backs, obviously you've got quarterback safety. What would you say, would there be any sort, what's the difference in essence between the cornerback and safety and the fact of the terminology, the way you've got to play? And is there anything really that could set you out as a cornerback that you think, okay, let's see if we can transition you to safety? Because I know there was talk obviously about Benford when he come on saying, oh yeah, they can look to make the move for him to become a safety, but he's turned out to be a very good corner for a sixth round pick out of Villanova.
Yeah, I mean, Benford is playing really good football. I think to answer your question, there are so many nuances, so many differences between playing corner and safety. What a lot of teams like to do is if a guy has the ability to play corner and they think that his skills are starting to diminish, but he still can be effective in cover schemes, you like to see those guys move to safety. It's hard sometimes for a safety who's always been on the back end, never had to come down and play on the outside and play against those shifty fast receivers. That's a whole different type of skill set. That's a whole different type of understanding the coverages, understanding what you should do. So that nuance is really different and sometimes difficult for safeties to do, where sometimes a corner may be able to kind of make that shift and kind of say, okay, I'm cover two, I'm a cover three, I'm going to be free safety here. And then if you get caught in base coverage, you can still walk down and get on a slot or get on an outside receiver or get on a flex tight end. And because you've kind of done it before, you kind of have some of those instincts that you need to be able to play effectively off air or maybe get up and play press coverage, where sometimes safeties, they don't have that flexibility to do that or they haven't been asked to do that in their position. Your safety is more like the quarterback.
Yeah.
Back in. So your free safety is generally going to be the one that calls the signals, tell you where to go, help you get checked. We've been spoiled here as Bills fans to have Jordan and Micah. Who are interchangeable. So they both had a really good grasp of the defense. They could get guys aligned when they weren't in the right position. So your safety is kind of like that guy. You have to be able to see the whole field. Whereas a corner, depending on what's called for me, I need to know what everyone's doing and how they aligned. But I kind of have my section. I have my little spot. If it's man-to-man, it's simple. I guard the guy in front of me. Like, that's simple as that. Like, hey, what coverage, what technique am I playing? Depending on what scheme you call, if it's a blitz, I'm probably going to be inside technique. I'm taking away any slants, any in routes. If it's, I know I have safety help, I want him to run inside. So I'm going to take away all the outside routes. I'm going to get outside technique and really try to funnel him inside of me, knowing that I have a safety sitting here either in the hole or safety at the post. So I'm not taking any of those outside fakes because I already have that position and I hold that by my body position. And I want him to run a four cut. I want him to run a post because I have a free safety really sitting there waiting to either make the interception or deliver the big hit. And so when you understand how to do those things and work in tandem with your safety, it makes your job very easy. But it's not easy to do either. It's not easy for a safety to walk down and say, press coverage on that man. Whereas if I'm a corner, I can be taught certain nuances of the safety aspect. But then again, I still need a guy like a Micah Hyde or a guy like Jordan Poyer to kind of say, this is how you play it. This is what you do. So that's where coaching really comes into handy. And thinking about somebody who really is, I think he's a safety. I think they'll try to play him as corner. When we look at this guy, the kind of the draft prospects coming out now, we have Cooper DeJean, Iowa, everybody, like, amazing football player. Iowa really utilized him amazing. He was all over the place. He played slot. He played corner. He played safety. But I think his skill set translates better to being a safety at this level. Just because I saw him get beat with double moves, and you got to have some really good makeup speed. And I didn't always see the burst on film with those moves. When people went double move on him, they accelerated, they pulled away from him. So I think he's better served being a safety and being one of those guys that, oh, we flex a tight end out. We're in base coverage. Okay, Cooper can walk over there and match up, and he can match up. Well, he has really good instincts. He's a really good football player and a good special teams player. So I think that'll serve him well at the next level. So that's a guy that I think that's really getting a lot of pub. Some people think he's going to be first corner off the board. I think he ends up being a safety when it's all said and done. But he still needs to get into the right scheme.
Yeah, no, that's probably led into what I was actually going to say when you were talking about interchangeable. When that, the first thing I was going to say, like, Cooper DeJean, where do you see it on there? So took the words right out of my mouth, as Beatloaf said. But let's, if we look at the draft group here, I mean, obviously, the Bills, they're going to have, they've got holes, obviously. They've got lost Hyde, they've lost Poyer, lost Trey White, they've lost Dane Jackson. Obviously, they've got Douglas, Benford, Elam, Mike Edwards, they brought over. Obviously, re-signed Taylor Rapp. Obviously, in the whole grand scheme of things, is obviously defensive back, is it safety or corner that's really, would you say, is more a little bit of a priority over the other for the Bills?
I would say they're probably both a priority for the Bills. You want depth at safety, right? Because you've also signed a veteran safety from Kansas City, and his name escapes me, but I can see his face right now.
Mike Edwards,
yes. Thank you. So you have Rapp and Edwards back there. So you kind of got like, here's our guys. Now the question is who's behind them? One of those guys goes down. Who are we going to continue? Who can step up where the play level never drops off? And so the Bills historically will always draft a couple corners. They will always draft the safety. That's kind of how we always do. They will keep like 9 or 10 defensive backs, sometimes 11, depending on if one of them can play special teams on there. So, you know, now you do have you have Cam Lewis, who kind of can play that nickel, kind of he can play the nickel behind Taron. He can also play safety. So you've got some guys that have been in the system and understand your terminology and understand your calls for a while. But I would see them picking up some safety in the later rounds. I think, honestly, when I look at it, you've traded away Diggs. You lost Gabe Davis. You signed some guys, but I would say you might consider trying to add a playmaker. It just depends on how the draft shakes out. I think definitely offense is going to be a priority for them. I'm not sure if they go receiver. It just depends on if they can move up, if they stay where they are. Is it best available? If it's best available, you could take defensive tackle. You could take a linebacker. You could take a corner at best available if that's what you really want to fill a hole with. And at that spot, I don't know who's there. I don't know if Cooper DeJean fit, if he's there. Some people think he might be the first corner of the board. I don't think he's the first corner off the board. I think Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo is the first corner off the board. They both have the size. They're both about 6 foot, close to 200 pounds. So they both can play. But I think Mitchell is probably more of that press corner. So there's a lot of teams that really want to see that press corner guy come up there and play. So it'll be interesting because Cooper could be around. And it'll be interesting to see if the Bills take him. I think he was fit well. He could definitely come in and play. But I've also seen, you've also got a few guys that have already said, hey, we can play. Like, I'm here. And you have a first round in Elam, who this is kind of like, we need to see you kind of take the next step
and take a break.
So this is kind of it. So I definitely think they draft a corner maybe in the mid to late rounds and pick up a safety late. And then they'll definitely bring some safety and some of those undrafted guys. They'll definitely bring some of those guys in because you want to hit on those guys. You want to be able to draft guys and develop guys. And then don't forget, you also have June 1st. There'll be some June 1st veteran cuts that'll happen. And so there's always a surprise cut. You're like, hey, come play for us. And so you could kind of really fill your roster by just kind of being patient and waiting and seeing who's available, who's out there. So I don't see a knee-jerk reaction, but it is going to be interesting to watch as a corner, just seeing what the Bills do when they pull the trigger. Do they take a corner first? I don't think guys that they would say would be an immediate impact are going to be on the board for them unless there's a run on wide receivers that we just don't see, or run on quarterbacks early, and that pushes guy down the boards. But we'll see in a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah. One name, obviously, I want to get your opinion of, obviously, a safety from Ohio State, Josh Proctor.
I like Josh Proctor. I think Josh Proctor is a guy, smart. When you look at him, people don't think that he has like that crazy foot speed, but really fast, like really smart. Like he has football speed, I would say. He's not gonna be like a 4.35 guy. I'm like, you know what, put him here. Yeah. But I watched him mature throughout the process of being at Ohio State and learning multiple different multiple defenses, what they asked him to do, from being on slot, being on a safety, coming down. And I thought he played very solid this past season, and really was a kind of a calming force on the back end. They didn't give up a lot of big plays. He got guys lined up. So it was really fun. So I think he's a guy that I would target if I'm the Bills. And I'm not saying it because I'm a Buckeye, but really, yeah. I am saying it because I'm a Buckeye. And we just need more Ohio State guys on the roster. We only have one. We have Curtis Samuel. Well, you need more Buckeyes on the roster. So, Brandon Bean, if you're watching and listening, please, Josh Proctor, get some more Buckeyes on this roster. No, just kidding. I think Proctor is a smart guy and a guy that is going to do everything right and come in, and he'll play special teams. He'll come in and learn the defense. And he's a young guy, so if you kind of get him in, you can kind of get him, help him learn some things, help him really do some things, so you don't necessarily have to trot him out early. And so those are all the things when you look at where does he fit in the scheme of things. I think he can come in and be a rain safety, kind of a la Micah Hyde. But I wouldn't rule out Micah Hyde coming back later in the season as well, like after week two. That's kind of always when, if he's not signed and it just they don't like the way it looks, you could see a lot of veterans being signed after week two. And that's just kind of the business of football, where you know, some guys have the ability, if they get injured after the first week, if they're on the roster, they can still get their full salary. So the business side says you sign some of those guys that have that eligibility after week two, where you don't have that option. So the business side of it says you're going to bring some of those veterans in to bolster your secondary. If you don't like what it looks like after week two, after that first game, you'll bring guys in. So again, as Brandon Bean said in the press conference, the roster's not finished. As a fan, I'm just like, I understand that statement very well. The Bills are one of the few teams that bring in guys constantly. And I love it. You're always working guys out, always bringing guys in, so that if something happens, you are ready to pull the trigger on a guy. So they do a good job of evaluating and getting guys in and making sure they're in shape, making sure they watch film, making sure they're talking to them. So I could see them making some moves and having a nice little kind of depth chart of guys they want to bring in case an injury happens, in case somebody's not to that level. They do a really good job of making sure they have their pipeline of guys they want to bring in when things go right.
Yeah. And I'm going to do one little thing. I'm going to do like a little teammates questions in a minute, which will be both Buffalo and Ohio State. Just quickly back on the draft, are there any prospects that you like, whether it be safety, cornerback, obviously using your defensive back knowledge here, that you like the looks of, that could be a target for the Bills in the middle round or so? Because more likely will be out first two rounds, potentially looking more offense or more D tackle probably round two. But is there any cornerbacks or safeties that you really do like coming out of this draft class?
I think it's going to be it's interesting, because depending on how the Bills prioritize their need, like we may be looking saying, hey, I think they should get a corner or a safety. Mm-hmm. Maybe I like what we have going into it, and we're just going to play it out. But I like and Alabama had a couple corners that were there. He has a cool name. His name is Kool-Aid McKinstry. It's like from Alabama. I liked him. I thought he was a good player. I'm not sure he's around in the later rounds for the Bills, but if they wanted to pull the trigger, maybe second or third round, if he's sitting there, I wouldn't mind that. There's a guy, you always look at some of those big schools. Michigan has Mike Sanstrill. I think next year there's going to be some really good corners, and one corner coming out of Michigan and Will Johnson. He can play. He really can play. He's definitely going to be a first round draft pick if he stays healthy and has the season that he had like he did last year. And Denzel Burke from Ohio State, I thought if Denzel Burke had came out this year, he would have been the first cornerback taken off the board, but he wanted to come back to school. So those are kind of guys that I've been watching. And ironically, Will Johnson, I played football with the Bills with his uncle, Damaris Johnson, who was on the roster in 95. So I got to kind of, I was hoping he went to Ohio State. Like Damaris and I had all that text saying like, go to Ohio State, but he's a Michigan guy and he chose to stay at home and go to Michigan. So as I'm rooting for him wherever he goes. I think he's a phenomenal player, excellent young man. And so I wish him well. That's the only Michigan guy that I actually root for. Really. And it's hard to get me to root for a Michigan guy, but I will wish him well no matter what, just because I know his uncle, and he's a very good young man, humble young man. So I'm like, yeah, I will root for him no matter what. I want to see him have all the accolades up next season, except when he plays Ohio State, you know, have a bad game against us.
Of course. So let's play teammates. It's just going to be a few questions. I say it can combine. It can be from either the time at Ohio State or from the Bills. We'll go with the first one going, the best teammate, your favorite teammate.
My favorite teammate, when I was with the Bills, undoubtedly, we hung out so much that they confused our names. And that is Ken Irvin. We were like this. We became really good friends. Ironically, we went to the Senior Bowl and we're both on the same squad. And so we hung out at the Senior Bowl. They had like a lobby with snacks and stuff, and they had everything kind of roped off so we didn't have to sit in our rooms. And they had all these video games and everything that you could just hang out, table tennis, foosball.
Yep.
So we spent all our time down there hanging out, and they had the game Off-Road. I don't know if you played that game before. It was like this little game. You had the brake and a gas pedal going. You had a steering wheel. You had four of them all around. All four players get on there. You had different colored Jeeps, and you would jump and do kind of things and drive. And it was called Off-Road because you had the off-road trucks. So we hung out there and played the entire time and just talked and got to know each other. And then I was drafted in the third round by the Bills. He was drafted in the fourth round by the Bills. So I'm looking at finishing that up. I'm like, man, I know somebody. And we hit it off immediately, hung tight. We still talk to this day. That was my teammate. We were roommates for all the road games, home games, all that stuff. We were roommates for everything. Lived in the same apartment complex, gave each other rides into practice. Like, that was my guy, and still is my guy.
Cool. Who was the hardest person you had to defend? Again, it could be Ohio State, it could be Bills, it could be training camp, it could be matches. Who was the hardest player you had to cover?
I want to say Jerry Rice, but which was probably like the craziest and probably the biggest name that I had to cover. But the hardest person to cover was actually Steve Tasker. And a lot of people don't know that because he was so shifty, so fast. And he has really good size. You don't think he's as big as it. You get around like, oh, he's actually a pretty good size. And then he's so quick in and out of his break. So you really had to pay close attention to his feet, how he did it. Being a special teams guy, he knew how to use his hands very well. And he was so quick at faking one way and going another way. And he was just really shifty. And so guys like that, you're just kind of like, man, this guy is really hard to cover because he could line up outside and in the slot. And so that made it difficult when you're trying to play with a guy that you can't get your hands on. Like outside, I can get close to the line and I can jam you on the slot. I had to kind of let him have free reign. And when he was in the slot, he was a beast to try to cover because you couldn't really get your hands on him. And we say that wiggle. He had a really good wiggle routes. And he would just look at you. And he was so competitive too. It was funny because you're like, you didn't think he was calm, and he would talk trash to you and say all kind of funny things. I'm just like, yeah, you won that round, but he was definitely a hard guy to cover.
Oh, that's good. And the last one is who was the team joker? Who was the funniest, put it that way?
Without a doubt, Ted Washington. Ted Washington was the funniest dude. And he had a nickname for everybody. And so it was just funny. He had dances. He had nicknames for everybody. He kind of kept the party going. Things went bad, you just kind of like, he would say something, just make you laugh and be like, okay, it's not that bad. We're going to regroup. We're going to come back and play. But man, Ted was one of the funniest guys to be around, and everybody loved him as a teammate. But when he stepped on the field, he was unreal, amazing, a force of nature in the middle, and then act silly on the sideline and make faces and just like, Ted, you're a fool. Like, you're crazy, Ted. You're fun to be around. I'm enjoying this game because of you.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And I mean, Marlon, thank you ever so much for coming on the show, talking about your experience with the Bills, your draft experience and all that. And for people listening and watching, where can they find you and obviously what and all the work that you actually and the content that you do?
So I am on Cover One Sports Network. You can find us there. We're on the College Football Channel, and my podcast is What Happened on Saturday with Marlon Kerner. My name is actually my Twitter handle. That's my Twitter handle and my Instagram handle. So Twitter is open, Instagram is private. So if you want to join, just shoot me a message like, hey, I heard you on the podcast, I want to follow you, and then I respond. So I try to
get I'll make sure I get on that. But no, I mean, It's such amazing experience getting to talk to you about this. And again, just want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
No problem. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, Marlon, for joining us on the show. And it really is an eye opener on what it's like going into the combine, going into your rookie year, and obviously what to look for in defensive backs, cornerbacks and safeties and all that. So what he's actually done is actually quite good. And we've still got a lot more coming up on the show between now and draft day. I mean, we've got about another three or four more draft analysts to come. So we'll get you as much of much analysis and prospects that you may or may not have heard of and wants to look out for in the show. Obviously we've got the star of the playbook, CBS color commentator Emery Hunt on the next show. We've got Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scout Portfolio coming on. We've got Jack Brentel of the Touchdown UK due to join us. And if you haven't gone to their website yet, go to their website, download their it's only £3, buy their draft guide. It's actually a good read and obviously gives you a list of all, I think they did about 300 prospects or something like that. So it's definitely a good incisive read to read up on all the prospects that we've talked. And then my favorite guest, Dean Kindig on the week of the draft, as we just talk prospects. He gets his big board out, he gets his spreadsheet out, and really enjoy talking to him. And then we hit the draft. So it's going to be an interesting 2 weeks. I hope you continue to subscribe, follow us on all the socials. And all we can say is for Robin, it's Matt saying good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for listening, and let's go Buffalo Bills.
Go Bills.
Yeah, not us. You don't know anything about heart. You know anything about work? That's who we are. Bills on three. One, two, three.